Just a reminder, today's conference is being recorded.
Would you like to have any heart-to-heart talk? Then you can ask anything. I'll take up that point, what you would like. All of you are welcome. That's all I can say.
Would the master expound on the precepts for initiation?
That's all right. First of all, we should know what initiation means. Initiation is no ceremony, no rite, no ritual, no offering. It is just like a school. A lesson is given. And that lesson, first is theory explained, inner. And then experience is given, you see. We are all children of God. God is light, and we are also light, being of the same essence as that of God. But our light is enveloped by different coverings of the physical, astral, and cosmic, and supercosmic. Just like a lamp, which is two, three, four coverings, it appears that is not, there is no light there. But when you shake off one covering, you have some light. When you shake off the other one, more light. As you shake off all coverings, you see it is all light. Similarly, we are light, children of light. But enveloped by so many coverings, you see. So initiation means just raise our soul, just shake off the covering first, which is of the physical body, which is iron curtain, I would say, to raise the soul above it. To raise the soul above body consciousness, physical consciousness. And open the inner eye to have experience of light. And also, to open the inner eye, to hear the voice of God and music of the spheres. This is what this actually means by the word initiation. To be initiated into the beyond. Learn to die so that you may begin to live. For that, what have we to do? We are souls, conscious entities. Our seat of the soul in the body is back the eyes. You must have seen some man dying. The light withdraws from the underneath, goes to the back of the eyes, and eyes are upturned. Then the drop-in comes, what is called death. So seat of the soul in the body is back the eyes. But it enlightens the whole room, whole body. So those rays of the soul, you might say, which is enlivening the whole body, those are to be withdrawn and brought to the back of the eyes. There the inner eye or the single eye opens, we see the light of God. That is why Christ said, if thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be full of light. Now we have got two eyes. How the two eyes can become single? That's a practical question. See, all of them also say the third eye should be opened, that is back of the eye. But that opens only when our life current, our sensory current, is withdrawn at the back of the eyes. This is first step. And for that there have been many made with Skype on that, and many of them are man-made. They are time-consuming, difficult, as elders do, and we are already not fit for those these days. They involve prana system, breathing, etc. Or by intellectual wrestling, we come to some conclusion. But that is not seeing. So it is a matter of practical self-analysis. How to rise above body consciousness, how to die while alive. Saint Plutarch tells us, those who are initiated into the beyond, their soul has the same experience as the soul has the experience at the time of death. So we have to withdraw our soul to the seat of it, written at the back of the body. So initiation means just somebody, if you can do of your own self, well and good. Anybody and everybody is welcome. A blind man needs two eyes to see. If not, then in that case, we need the help of somebody who knows the way, who is competent to do it. And who is competent to do it? Not the Son of Man, mind that. It is the God in him, which is manifest, that has the power to raise our soul above the bondage of mind and matter, with little thought. That costs him nothing. God made all creation with one thought of his. If God manifests at any human soul, of course God resides in every heart. There is no heart without it. But God is not manifest there. The reason why our soul is under the control of mind, mind is under the control of the outgoing faculties, and our attention is diffused into the world outside through the outgoing faculties. We are identified with the world. So we do not know it is that power. That is there, of course. If by withdrawing our attention from outside, then rising above the senses, we open the eye and see that is there. If you shut the doors of the temple of the body, you will see the light of heaven. So this is what it really means, initiation. Before we go to him, our inner eye is closed and our inner ears are also closed. They are sealed, as the scriptures say. So somebody, the God in him, who is manifest, he comes across to those who are really hankering after God. There is food for the hungry and water for the thirsty. Guru appears when the chela is ready. You see? That is God made arrangement, no man's arrangement. He sees some child is after him and then he makes some arrangement to bring such a seeker after truth somewhere where he is manifest, and that manifested God is competent to give him that experience of light and hearing of the music of the spheres. So this is what is meant by education. That is why Christ said to his disciples, blessed are you who see things what the old prophets and righteous men could not see. Then he said, blessed are you who hear things that the old prophets and righteous men could not hear. So there is something of seeing and something for hearing. Hearing the voice of God and seeing the light of God. That is within us already. That is the controlling power which is keeping us in the body. Otherwise we would have run away out of the body. That's all. Two eyes open. Two nostrils open. But we cannot. So this is exactly what is meant by initiation. That affection, no religion, because visions are all full of thought in your mind to have this very truth in one. God is light. And God is music of the spheres. A blind man is truly defined by masters as one, not one who has got no eyes on the face, but whose inner eyes closed. In the terminology of the face, a blind man is one whose inner eyes closed, although he has two eyes on the face. So when you come to him, you are blind. When he gives you a sitting, well, you see light, you testify. So when you return, you are not blind anymore. Now you close your eyes, you see darkness. The one who is competent to remove that darkness, veil of darkness, and the light flows forth, and you testify it is so, well, this is what is meant by initiation. And this here, the ABC starts. This is not the end all by that. When the world's last is end, there the listening starts. There are so many mansions in the house of our Father. There are physical planes, astral planes, causal planes, super causal planes, and pure spiritual planes in the house of our Father. So, the one who is competent to bring your soul up into the beyond and give an experience of the light of God and hear the voice of God, he is also competent to guide you when you rise above body consciousness and traverse into those planes. It is the God in him what is called God power or the Guru power or the Christ power. This is the ultimate goal before us as a man, and the purpose of joining various religions is only that. And you'll find in each religion a true Christian is defined as one who sees the light of God. A true Hindu or a Sikh or a Buddhist or anybody, you see, in the scriptures you'll find is one who sees the light of God. We have joined various schools of thought, these are the first step. To remain in some school or college is blessed. But to remain there, not to have that purpose for which you have joined, I think you have not derived the full benefit of joining that particular school. Of course, we have taken the first step for required for preparation of the ground, that is reading of scriptures, saying prayers, performing certain rites and rituals. The purpose is what? By reading scriptures, we know what Master said on the subject. The right and proof thereof also you can have only when you sit by somebody who knows the way. Those who are simply try to interpret the scriptures at the level of intellect, they cannot do full justice to the work. God is light, they say. But intellect, you say, it is light of intellect. It is substantial light. So, just scope of reading scriptures and there to create an interest in us to have those very experiences what the Masters had in their lives. So by performing, you see, rites and rituals or saying prayers means what? To develop love and devotion in us for God. These are good actions. They are required for preparation of the ground, but seeing is the level. Seeing arises to the soul when it is liberated from mind and outward faculties. That is where all masters have known itself. So this is actually what is meant by initiation. When masters come, they don't educate one religion or the other. They simply tell us the highest teaching what all masters gave that we have forgotten and they revive. And who revives? The God in them. So, this is required. There is something required for that. Preparing the ground. First, who can unite you with God? Only with God's grace alone that can unite you. First, to rely everything to God. Second, there are some preparation things required, you see. Strict vegetarian diet. Avoidance of all meat, fish, fowl, and eggs. Why? Well, as people think that they give strength. What do the animal need? How strong they are. They call it the power by horsepower. Now there's a complaint in the West about the vegetarian diet, you see. About 15 World Vegetarian Conferences have been held so far. One only has been held in India, and 14 have been held in the West. But there's a campaign everywhere for vegetarian diet. They've come to know that it's speeder than we diet. In every respect. This is one reason. Second reason is that we have to control over our passions. Anything the use of which goes to prayer of passions, that we have to avoid. That's the main thing. If doctor comes and advises you not, the patient not to take the solid food, you have to obey. So this is a helping factor. Similarly, we are conscious beings. We have to become more conscious. So anything the use of which goes to make our consciousness marvel, we have to eliminate. All intoxicants, alcoholism. And further, good character. So these are the necessity, helping factors to be initiated. Even if you that is, don't live up to it, take heed that the light which is within you is not darkened. So this is what is meant by initiation, and these are the preparatory grounds. There is food for the hungry and water for the thirsty. Maybe as a reaction of the past, or by passing through various vicissitudes in life, by discrimination we know what to do. So this is thought of, you see. Hunger is there to have some safe refuge, we have to heaven. So such like person in whom this object has arisen, God sees. He's within us. He makes some arrangement to bring us in contact with somewhere where you can be initiated into the beyond. This is what is meant, the standard of Christian religion. That the basic principle of all religions, which we have forgotten, that's all. And by parallel study of religions, you'll find like that. We all gave the same. Light and sound is the way back to God. This is God into a special power, two aspects of it. So remain where you are, no need of changing any religion, you see. Simply, to be true to your own religion. And pity it is that I have met most of the heads, ministers of the various religions. These teachings are there in their scriptures, but they themselves do not know. They know only the elementary steps. And they don't refer about these things. If they do refer, the people ask, well, give us please. Then it's better not to mention about it. So to arrange human, we forget masters come from time to time to revive that very forgotten lesson, you see. So this is no new religion, no new faith, no new formation. This is helping everybody to be true to his own teachings of their own masters to whom we belong. So I think this clarifies what is initiation and what are the helping factors, the requirements for initiation. What else?
Thank you, teacher.
No, that's all right. So we have met after a long time, you see, first time in Miami, probably. And if you have any question to the best, in God's grace, I know that will be given out.
Can you clarify karma?
Make what?
Karma, can you clarify it?
Oh, yeah. Karma question. Well, in all scriptures you'll find this subject has been taken up. Somewhere it is clarified in detail, somewhere simply referred to it. And this is due to the fact these scriptures, most of them, were not written by the masters themselves. Most of them. These were written later on. Later on, only by hearsay you can have. Some references are made. In some way they are written that they will give a full detail of it. So in all scriptures you will find, as you sow, so shall you reap. You see? Action and reaction is there. If you put a seed or pepper underground and water it, what will result? Plant will come out, it will hundreds of peppers. One seed. If you put some seed or some fruit, you put it underground, you water it, and that will give, praying, it will give hundreds of those fruits. So very thought, you see, what strikes you, that has reaction. You have one thought and all other thoughts will come up like the pepper or the mango or anything. You see. So there are codes, you see, there are small cause codes in which ordinary cases are finalized in weeks. There are some high codes and peak also, you see, in which the cases continue for years together. Similarly, action and reaction comes from straight up, just like small cause codes, you see, they bear fruit. Sometimes they take longer course. So as we say, we cannot escape the result of death. And that is the cause of reaction. So what happens, you see? Daily we are having some sowing some seed. Any thought which occurs, that is a seed. When it comes into commission, that becomes action. Really the seed is there in our thought. So thoughts are very potent, you see. They react very strongly. So there are three kinds of karma, you see. One which you do daily. They are called karma, you see. Daily we do. And the second which are in fruit according to which our present life is based. Wheels are low, I mean the richness and poverty, high position, low, some make very strong effort, they cannot go to the front. Others make little, no, they come up to the front, that's all. Some are very learned people, they cannot earn their livelihood. And others are not so learned that they have earned a million dollars, you see. So these are something, reactions of the past, which is bear fruit, according to which our present life is based. And there are still some seeds which have not grown as yet, grown into fruit. Those are called in store, karmas in store. So these are three, as if there are no end to them. You see, every day we sow seeds, they are bearing fruit, others are still in store. They'll go around action, reaction, and like that. I tell you, all this is mentioned about Lord Rama, perhaps Ramayana, what you might have heard, that he, after that came Krishna, Lord Krishna, you see. How he died, you know? Krishna was lying in a wilderness, and one hunter was there, there was one eye, you see, in the feet that flash like the eye of an antelope, you see. At a distance, I think. Shot an arrow, you see, that went into his feet and he died. When he came near to his side to Lord Krishna and asked him why, well, I regret I never meant that, but I thought perhaps it was the eye of a deer or an antelope, that is why. No, don't fear. It is I kill you.
Yeah.
In the Lord Rama's case, you see, that is the reaction. If even the incarnation cannot escape the reactions of karma, how can we? So now question, Raju, is there no hope? There is hope. How? Let me see. You have to say anything? I am going to reply further.
Yes, in pertaining to diet.
Let me finish this.
Yes.
Then the further. So there's when masters come, what they do? They wind up all actions, all karma. How? There's no end. Action reaction will go on. We feed, sow new seeds, some are in fruit, some are in store, again they go on like that. There's no end to that. And even the incarnation cannot, I will escape. What the masters do? Those who come up to him, they lay down a line of action. Future life.
Yeah.
Don't think of anybody, you know, thought, word and deed. Be truthful. In all your actions, no acting, posing, at heart something, saying something, like that. Not deceiving anybody. And to be chaste, in thought, word and deed, and love all. And do self-assurance. These are the actions laid up for future. If you do that, you'll get no showing.
It's pretty tough.
And your tough. You see, everything appears to be tough, but still, but there's something more than not that much only, you see. This is for reason. They give him a contact with the God within, with the light and sound of God within. That goes to nullify, help him inside, you see. They have love for all. Naturally, these things come up, become easier. This is one thing. And those karmas, which are in fruit now, according to which our present life is based, they do not touch it. Otherwise, if they touch it, then the man should die. You see, because our life is based on that. But they do, you see what they do, they give food, bread of life to the soul. They give a contact with the light and soul principle within, that is the bread of life, and the soul becomes strong. What is the result? That these present karmas which come up sometimes, poverty, sometimes sickness, something this, because the soul is strong, these all reactions lose their pitching effect. Just like there's a fight going on. There are one very weak and the others are very strong. And the weak one gets one blow, he's stunned, he says, I'm killed. And others, they are strong now, where there have been so blows and fighting, we did not even care for that, because they are strong enough. So reactions do come up, but they get the strength of soul by the bread of life, which is coming in contact with the light and some principle within. So present life passed that way. And those in stores, when they come in contact with God, become conscious co-worker of the divine plan, all karmas which are in store, they are burnt away. Just like seeds, if you roast in the heaven, you see, they don't grow up. And this way, how the whole karmas are burned up. That is why I had to say, what is the use of going to your master if these reactions are not ended? Just like if you go to the feet of a lion, be afraid of the jackals. What is the use of going to a lion? This is how the karmas are wound up, you see. First, by prescribing certain conduct of life. Second, inner contact higher. Like that. You, please?
Yes, I have two questions.
Yes, yes. What's that?
One was pertaining to diet.
Yes.
We are to abstain from fish, meat,
yes,
eggs, and etc. Now, must we also abstain from coffee and tea, which has caffeine and tannic acid?
I tell you. Coffee, tea, etc., you see, does not give you too much intoxication. Intoxication, they come under the category of intoxication.
Mm-hmm.
Goes against the law of health, but does not affect killing somebody. I'll tell you why. You see, that is also sin, strictly speaking. Even to breathe is sin. Because we kill so many insects. To walk on earth is also a sin. We trample so many insects underground, under the feet. To eat vegetables is also a sin. Let me go further. But each sin has its own value, comparative value.
Oh, but must you abstain from the coffee and tea in order to fulfill the word?
That's all. This I'm telling you. That is a sin, strictly speaking, but that does not give you intoxication all at once to lose your consciousness. Mm-hmm. For that, some used light, etc. That's another thing, but strictly that is against the clause.
Now, one more thing. Must you become a celibate? Must you abstain from sex entirely?
That comes. Further, one thing that you clarified, that point is not very clear, I think. You have another, this wake up again. Even I was telling you to eat vegetables is a sin.
Yes.
You see?
But to eat vegetables is a sin.
I tell you, I said breathing is a sin. That I'm going further more than that. Why? Just have you patience here.
What is sin?
I tell you. Sin which stands in the way to the realization of God, that is a sin. They are least sin and they are grosser sins. For instance, you kill a man, you are hanged. You kill an animal, you are simply fined because there nobody is going to be hanged for that. You kill birds and insects, nobody cares for you. See? So, why you find in the elements, in the lowest vegetable, there is one element fully developed. Four are latent. In insects, there are two elements developed and the others are latent. In birds, there are three elements fully developed and two are latent. In animals, there are four elements fully developed and one is latent. In man, all elements are fully developed. So it is comparative, you see. What the master say? Live on the least thing, vegetables, you see, or grains, and become conscious co-worker of the divine plan. Only then you can be absorbed, you see. That is what we hope. The other thing you were just telling, what is it?
Yes, must you become a celibate?
Yes.
You must abstain.
I tell you. Well, it is said, life of continence is required. We must have continence. Life of continence. That's the control over all senses.
Whether you're married or not.
Yes, both.
Both. I mean, right. If you're married, then you must abstain.
I'm going further. Have you patience here? I'm going further. You're right. Well, look here. Those who are not married, they should be strictly celibate. One thing. Those who are married, what they should do? They should live up to what the scriptures say. What scriptures say? They say, married life is no bar to spirituality if conducted according to the scriptures. And what do the scriptures say about marriage? They say marriage is not a contract but a sacrament. It is God who unites. Let God disunite. It is taking a companion in life. You see? In weal or woe on this earthly sojourn to help each other to know God. That's the highest aim before a man. One duty is of begetting children, maybe. Not 100% duty, you see. And they went so far, Christ said, husbands should love their wives as Christ loved the church. So this is one part of the show, not everything, you see. But if you've given up to sensuous enjoyment daily, this and that is not helpful.
Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the satsang for Master Kirpal Singh. Before we start, one of the satsangis let me know if you need to increase the volume of the satsang, you can press *4, and likewise decrease the volume by pressing *7. Okay, our reader today is Rudy Cascone. Are you there, Rudy?
Yes, I am, John.
Okay, carry on.
Thank you. Today, we are reading the second part of the talk, Nam and Ramayana, of our master on the famous work of Sant Tulsidas, And this is from the August 1973 Satsang Desh. And I would like to bring to light three poignant statements from the previous reading to get us into the spirit of the reading. One is, the presence of light within is proof of contact with the Nam. And two, second, if you wish to that concealed knowledge revealed, repeat the Nam with your life's breath. And three, there is no difference between the name and the named. And now, Master begins by saying, attribute and non-attribute both are forms of Brahman. They are inexpressible, unfathomable, eternal, incomparable. I think that Nam is higher than both, for they are controlled by Nam. What is the manifestation that comes from both attribute and non-attribute? Nam. Nam is the controlling power of everything, and to be connected to it, one needs a very fortunate destiny. It is a deep and subtle subject, but Tulsidas is unfolding it beautifully. The competent people know all. I speak of this knowledge from the love in my heart. The masters are the knowledgeable people who know everything. He tells us this from the wisdom of his own experience, from the depth of love he has in his heart. We see the wood, but the fire is hidden within it. Only the awakened have the true concept. Now he is speaking metaphorically. For example, fire is hidden in wood, and yet no one can see it. Just like this, both attribute and non-attribute are part of God's nature. If man truly understood this great truth, the knowledge would be salvation to him. But as he stands, he is bound to the cycle of births and deaths. Practice of attribute and non-attribute are both more difficult than Nam. Nam is greater than Brahm and Ram. All practices in the spheres of attribute and non-attribute are very exacting. But the practice of Nam is not at all difficult. Why is this? Because only through Nam can the attribute and non-attribute phases of God be understood. Without Nam, these aspects of the Lord cannot be grasped or absorbed. And this includes the outer expressions of creation. Nam is something contacted from within, spiritually, when one rises above the senses, and this is made possible only by a competent master. True understanding starts after this contact is made. For instance, to explain the working of a powerhouse is one thing, but if a person actually visits the building, a deeper understanding of its functions begins to form. The permeating Lord is imperishable. He is awakened truth, the source of all bliss. The omnipotent and omnipresent vibrates in every atom. There is no place where Nam does not exist, and it offers a very treasure house of happiness. Whatever is created through Nam. There is no place without Nam. This flawless Lord is in each heart, and yet the world is drowned in misery. One might well wonder or ponder the ironical fact that God resides in every being, and yet everyone is unhappy. We are swimming in Him, just as a fish swims in water. We are living in that life-giving nectar, but are dying of thirst. What is the reason for this sad situation? Nam's true form is God only by right endeavor. When it then manifests within. The reason for all our sorrows is that Nam is not manifest within us. The potential of experiencing Nam is within us, just as fire is in the wood, but it must be made manifest. Manifest the hidden Nam, also manifest the hidden sound. To make all this possible, the seeker must be ready to put in a little effort in order to gain something of a value that cannot be estimated. A precious gem must be selected from other stones and examined separately before its properties can be appreciated. Otherwise, it remains just another stone. So all our misery is through lack of contact with God. Water, water everywhere, but not a drop to drink. The Lord is everywhere. Where is He not? But men are not fortunate enough to have even the briefest experience of Him. So we are dying of thirst. It is in us, but we know it not. O cursed be this life, this living, O Tulsi. The world, the whole world suffers from this cataract. Bhik Sahib says similarly, O Bhik, no one need to go hungry, to be hungry, for each has tied to him a ruby, but no one cares to untie it. That ruby is Nam, the knot which binds matter and consciousness together. And if that knot is not untied by rising above body consciousness and establishing connection with Nam, we will remain hungry all through life. We may have material wealth, but spiritually we live like paupers. Then Nam power is limitless, beyond even non-attribute. I say Nam is greater than Rama, according to my understanding. Nam's power goes beyond the stage of non-attribute, and therefore is the greater power. Having already solved this mystery of life in all its aspects, Tulsidas is an authority on the subject. Further, he tells us how Nam is so greater than Rama by comparison. Coming to the aid of his devotees, of the devotees of that era, Rama took the physical form and washed away all the unhappiness that the sages, the rishis, and the munis were suffering at the hands of the evil forces running rife at that time. Well, this is the work of the avatar. Whenever the maintenance of moral righteousness is threatened, the avatar takes birth in the world to set the disorder right. When any country is badly run and riots begin, control is put into the military's charge and the trouble is corrected, after which the rule returns to the civil administration. So it is on a larger scale when the world retrogresses to a state beyond its own control, God's power manifests in the form of the avatar, who settles the chaos and misery and restores righteousness. The avatar, Ramchandra, or Lord Rama, who is stated to have been the incarnation of Lord Vishnu, was born the son of King Dashrath, and was an avatar competent in all the 14 supernatural powers. Tulsidas, author of this great epic, tells us of the two manifestations of the same power, which are superimposed upon each other. However, there is a vast difference between these two, the Master's Ram and the world's Ram. One Ram was the son of Dashrath, and one Ram is vibrating in each being. One Ram is all creation's play. one Ram is different from all. The main comparison is between the Ram which manifested in the avatar Ramchandra and the Ram which is different from or above all others' powers. God's devotee took human form, taking the world's burden and bringing peace to the devout. Repeating Nam with love is easy and is competent to enable the devotee to reach the stage of bliss. If the devotee repeats the Simran of Nam with full love and devotion, then without any difficulty, he will reach the stage of all bliss. Now he begins to go into detail of the comparison. Ramchandra freed one doomed woman called Ahila. Nam gives salvation to unlimited numbers. There is an anecdote in Lord Rama's life, but about the soul of a certain woman which, for committing a certain sin, was petrified like a rock for thousands of years. Lord Rama released that soul from its imprisonment in that lower expression by touching the rock with his foot. But Tulsidas is explaining how Nam, by comparison, gives freedom to all, to any soul which has retrogressed. This is a clear indication of Nam's greatness. It is even clearer when one understands that Nam is the maker of both avatars and masters. Electricity, for instance, can be used to create both heat and cold, both very useful but different demonstrations of the same power. So somewhere this great Nam power is working in the avatar, like a commander-in-chief of an army, and somewhere it is working in the master, like a viceroy. Both are expressions of the same power, but with different functions. As Kabir has said, God has made negative and positive, for he wanted to enact the play of creation. Both are God's great power, which he uses in his own design of creation. That power is the sustainer of everything. It is the background behind everything. Its methods of working are varied. That's all. Avatars punish the sinners and reward the righteous people. Masters free the attention from the prison of mind and senses and rejoin that attention or soul to its source. The avatar's job is to restore and maintain order in the world, that it may remain inhabited by the souls. The master's job is to uproot the souls from their worldly habitation, and they pull the souls above mind and senses and connect it to Nam itself. So negative power, negative and positive, both draw their power from the one Lord. There are those who argue and debate that positive is greater, that negative is greater, etc. Brothers, understand quite clearly that both are most necessary in this world. The negative power upholds all the laws of creation. The police force of any country does not bother the people who obey the laws, but rather they are a protection for good citizens. The task of the negative power is a very important one, just as is that of the positive power. And we must respect both. The master's aim is for man to cease coming and going in creation, for the soul to be freed from matter and senses, ultimately and without any undue waste of time, reaching its true and permanent home. The masters tell us that this world is full of negativity and it is a bad place in which to remain. And while living out our obligations here, we should join up with positivity, and then learn to transcend them both and realize the sustainer of all. Ram himself worked for the Rishi's peace. He himself went to war for righteousness. Lord Rama killed the powerful ogress Tarka, who was disturbing the great sage Vishvamitra and other rishis in their meditations, and for the same reason killed her son, Marich. Now, what does Nam do? Nam erases the devotee's sins and miseries. It gives a contact of itself which dispels the darkness like night fleeing before a sunrise. Just as the darkness of night disperses with the coming of the dawn, so is the darkness of ignorance and sin banished with the contact and practice of the Nam. You can say that all lower actions are consumed in the fire of knowledge, which is the power of Nam. Ram himself broke Shiva's bow, and by the grace of Nam, all the world's fears is cast asunder. Lord Rama was the only one who could break the powerful bow of Lord Shiva, and in doing so won the right of marriage to Princess Sita, daughter of the famous king Janak. Nam, on the other hand, has the power to banish all fear. With regular contact with Nam, a man becomes fearless. Ram made the petrified forest flourish with life. Ram made the petrified forest flourish with life. Nam enlivens the minds of men. Ram destroyed the line of evil. Nam in Kali Yuga destroys all sin. Lord Rama destroyed the Rakshasas and all their kin, the line of evil. But in this iron or negative age, the Kali Yuga, those under Nam gain freedom from their sins. Ram gave salvation to the devoted vulture. Nam gives salvation to millions, as stated in the Vedas. When King Ravan abducted Rama's wife, Sita, a vulture named Jatayu, who was deeply devoted to Rama, fought Ravan in an attempt to rescue Sita, but was mortally wounded in the combat. And the narrative tells also of another great devotee named Bildni, who had been preparing for Lord Rama's coming for many years, removing the thorns from the forest pathway, keeping them clear and clean, etc. When at last Rama arrived at that place on his journey to rescue Sita from Ravan, she fed him with wild berries, diligently tasting each one for sweetness before offering it to the Lord, which he graciously accepted. Rama gave salvation to both these devoted souls, but Nam gives salvation to limitless sinners. You will find the highest praise of Nam in many sacred scriptures, including the Vedas and the Shastras. Tulsidas himself gave many examples of Nam's greatness in his narrative of the Ramayana epic. For instance, Rama gave salvation to Vibhishan, Ravan's brother, and Hanuman by giving them special commissions in his service, whereas Nam gives salvation through service to many unknown and poor people. Also, Rama erected a bridge across the ocean, whereas Nam spans the ocean of life and carries the soul safely to the shore of freedom. Then Rama killed Ravan and every member of his huge and evil family. Nam destroys all attachment and illusion when the devotee practices it with love and sincerity. What other extraordinary achievements of Nam has Tulsidas mentioned? Through Nam's great blessing, Shiva enriched the inauspicious. Lord Shiva frequented the most inauspicious places like cremation grounds. His company was inauspicious, that of snakes and snow and so on. Even his appearance savored of the inauspicious, his naked body smeared with ashes, and yet, because he had the blessing of Nam, those very sinister places began to flourish wherever he went, and they have since been glorified. And as we all know, snakes and ashes have become most auspicious symbols. Such extraordinary things are made possible with the grace of Nam. The rishis, munis, yogis, who gained the bliss of Brahm, did so with the blessing of Nam. The ancient sages gained their spiritual elevation up to the point of their inner progress, all by the grace of Nam. Narad also realized the blessing of Nam and became the beloved of the Lord. Narad was a great devotee who realized the Nam's power and through it became the beloved of the world's beloved Vishnu, one of the Hindu Trinity, who sustained the universe. Nam is not a new power. It has ever been in existence. Each spiritual exponent gives out however much of its understanding that he gains and no more. How many can know Nam in its entirety? Whomsoever was fortunate enough to gain salvation did so only through Nam's blessing and none else, and each one gained freedom up to the point or level of their progress. The Lord's blessing overflows upon he who repeats the Nam. Prahlad became a shining example. Prince Prahlad was so devoted to the Lord that he gained a large share of his pleasure, which made Prahlad shine among devotees. Nam's glory is ageless. In every age, man has no memory of its glories, so the masters must come again and again to re-aliven the old truth. Kabir Sahib tells his own story when he says, I came in all four ages. In Satyug, my name was Sukrat. In Tetrayug, my name was Karunamai. When I came in Darpavyug, my name was Maininda. In Kalyug, my name is Kabir. And in all four ages, he told the people of Nam's greatness. Many are under the impression that this teaching is something new, but it is, in fact, the oldest thing there is. Sometimes it appears somewhat different outwardly, due to the slight variance of presentation or description by each master. But contact with Nam remains the same, and all other inner aspects remain constant. The world talks about Nam. Nam, but in actual fact, it is oblivious of it. When the masters come to revive the understanding, he gives the connection which enlivens the teaching. Dhruv, being disgusted with his father, repeated God's name and realized the incomparable tranquility. Through the world's injustice, Prince Dhruv left his kingdom in anger and started meditating in the forest, ultimately realizing the state of utter tranquility. He turned to God out of hatred for the world, but when he rose above the material level, he entered into tranquil bliss, again through the blessing of the Lord's Nam. When through Simran, Hanuman, the son of the wind, realized Nam, he brought Ram into his control. Hanuman was called the son of the wind. And Tulsidas says that by doing Simran, he gained knowledge of Nam, which took him to the stage of having his every wish fulfilled by Lord Rama. These anecdotes are being given to demonstrate how very Every spiritual aspirant must rely on the Nam's power to achieve success. Today, it is not different. If salvation is to be gained, it will be through the Nam. The important thing is to get connected to that which is the background of Nam and form, that which is the sustainer of both. Ajamal and the Singha Ganaka got salvation through the Lord's Nam. Even a great sinner like Ajamal and Ganaka the prostitute were redeemed by Nam. So why should we not also stand the chance of getting salvation if we get connected to Nam? Guru Ram Das explains that if one puts a small spark of fire among a huge pile of logs, they will be consumed to ashes in a very short space of time. So, for a large accumulation of sins, one needs but a small spark of Nam from the true master to incinerate them. He is giving so many examples, all in praise of Nam. And finally, what does he say? To what extent can Nam be praised? Even Ramchandra could not sing its praises. Well, this emphasizes the impossibility of describing Nam's greatness. One can only say that there is a place where it is manifested, and that is the human pole. There is also a very big powerhouse, which supplies according to the extent of power the pole is fit to bear. And from there, it is distributed. Nam is a deep subject which cannot be explained in words. It is beyond language. Tulsidas does not belittle Lord Rama when he says that he could not sing the praises of Nam, because as all realized souls have discovered, Nam is inexpressible. Whatever power the human pole can receive, so that much will be expressed. Guru Nanak then went so far as to say that if whatever the rishis, munis, and mahatmas have sung in praise of Nam were doubled, even that would be a poor attempt at describing the greatness of Nam. God's Nam is eternal, but it resides in this Kali Yuga. Those who do its Simran are fortunate. Tulsi became Tulsidas. The eternal Nam vibrates perpetually everywhere, and in this Kali Yuga, salvation is not possible without its contact. Tulsidas says that through devotion to Nam, he became Tulsidas instead of just poor Tulsi, i.e., he became a respected person addressed by his full name. He was the author of this great epic of the Ramayana, from which this hymn has been taken. It is one of the most sacred of Hindu scriptures and is a complete and comprehensive magnum opus on moral and righteous living, a work which is highly respected all over the world. In this sacred scripture, you will find the name that the Nam extolled in no uncertain terms. Do not waste time in small matters, brothers. The different outer phases of religion and religious learning progress on from that. Blessed are you that you belong to some religion, and I congratulate you on this. Remain in that religion, follow its tenets, and live up to them. But receive the knowledge of Nam. When Guru Arjan collected the writings of the Master for the compilation of the Guru Granth Sahib, what type of yardstick or criterion did he use to select that which was suitable from among the vast amount of writings? He selected that which had been spoken or written by those who had realized the Nam, the true devotees of Nam. And you will find therein the words of Kabir the weaver, those of Ravidas the cobbler, Trilokan the Brahmin, Dahana the farmer, Sayana, the barber, and saints born in many varied castes, other varied castes. Always remember that it is man who has made the different castes and classes. God did not send man to earth with a brand on him. God made man, a name which is given to the soul when in the human form. The soul is an entity of God, and as such, its caste is the same as God's. Someone once asked Hazur Baba Sawan Singh Ji, Maharaji, who are you? And Hazur replied, if God is a Hindu, then I am a Hindu. If he is a Sikh, then I am a Sikh. If he is a Christian, then I also am a Christian. The soul's caste is that of God, but according to the outer aspect, I am a Sikh. We must live in some social form, or if we don't, then we must design a new one in which to live, which is a mere waste of time when the Lord himself has given one birth within that particular religion appropriate to fulfill the individual's karmas. Live a life of righteousness, be ethical, and while living such a life, release your soul from the mind and the senses by getting connected to Nam. That particular social body will be praiseworthy wherein any man achieves this. When a person approaches a competent master, there is no consideration of religion, for he knows that the person is an embodied soul, and each soul is equal. There is no high or low. There is no question of east, west, north, or south. Know that the caste of all men is one. Man is purely an embodied soul, but unfortunately, he has forgotten himself. He does not know that he is not the body, but is the indweller of the body, actually its controller. All masters have advocated that one should know oneself in truth, and this is the science of Nam. It is the Kalma of the Muslim prophets who say that 14 tabaks or regions were made from the Kalma. What is Kalma? It is only a word. O God, tell me of that place from whence your word is coming without words. This clearly indicates that worldly language has nothing to do with the subject. 14 tabaks were made from the Kalma. In the Hindu scriptures, it says that through the sound, 14 stages were made. In Gurbani, it states, through the Nam, the entire Khand and Brahmand were made, and also through the sound, the earth and the sky were created. The New Testament says, in the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. All things were made by him. Without him was not anything made that was made. Guru Nanak states, the entire creation came after the shot. O Nanak, the sound vibrates in each being. You can call it sound, or shabd, or kalma, or nam, or other names. The untold story, shruti, or in the Upanishads it is called ujit. The masters have all sung its praises, each in his own way. If the words of the masters are all read with completely open hearts, men will come closer to each other. It is only narrow-mindedness and bigotry that separates us all. This place, Sawan Ashram, Delhi, is a common ground where you all are at present sitting together, hearing the words of the Ramayana. Here we take all kinds of scriptures, for the teachings of the masters has always been one. It is a science of the soul, just as medicine is a science of the physical body. Stay in whatever religion or sect you are following, but also learn to rise above to the extent of realizing that the whole world really belongs to one religion. Judge the true Satguru by the same criterion. know the Satguru for one who brings everyone together. There is no special place for Muslims only, or Hindus only, or other particular sects here at Sawan Ashram. The masters do not regard individuals as representatives of certain religions. They simply make them sit down together, for they see the world through the spiritual eye. Their work is geared to one aim, to bring the soul above the senses, connected to Nam, and ultimately reunited with the ultimate, nameless and formless God. For the purpose of this great work, there is no controversy of high and low. There is no recommendation to leave one's religion, and no advocacy of making new sects. They do advise the seeker to lead a pure and chaste life within their own castes and customs, and this above all, for perpetual happiness, get connected to the Nam and keep its regular contact. O holy sound, sweeping sweeter than the trees on the soft summer's breeze, sweeter than the melancholy of the beggar's night in the windswept stars. Inside the flesh, past the bone, a moon breaks open to talk to you. Well, God bless us, and thank you, Master, for being allowed to read this wonderful talk.
Thank you, Rudy, for the wonderful reading. Today we had 81 people at the satsang. Thank you, everybody, for attending, and thank you, Master, for providing this for us. Now please hang up your phone.